Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hey, welcome back to the Pod Crashed. This week, we're telling the story of Qantas Airlines Flight 32. Thanks for listening.
Let's go.
We did it, Joe.
Friends, it's that time of year. It is 800,000 degrees. And
enough.
For you, we don't have fans or air conditioning on.
Nope.
But we're going to do it.
Yes.
We got this.
Yep.
Ready for chaos. Today's story, Qantas Airlines Flight 32.
Wait, say that name one more time.
Qantas. Qantas Airlines.
With a Q.
So Qantas is like the Australian airline.
Ooh.
And the name is very silly. What is the name, right?
Yeah.
And it's actually, you know how like Nabisco is like National Biscuit Company? And they like
shortened it. I did not know that.
Oh, fun facts.
Wow.
Qantas, spelled Q-A-N-T-A-S, stands for Queensland and Northern Territory Aerial Services.
Okay.
And that was like the original name. Because Qantas is like way older than I thought it was. I don't know why. I assume, and guys, listen, you're all so lovely. Every single Australian who has reached out to us has been so wonderful.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to meet all of you someday because the Australians I have met have been less wonderful.
Yeah.
And so anything I say, I have some bad like impressions I need to shed. That's my bias. But I just assume somehow as part of that, that everything in Australia is like 30 years old.
Right. Like, right. Yeah.
Like they only like found it like 30 years ago
or whatever. Right.
Not that long ago. Right. No. Qantas has been around since like 1920.
Whoa.
In 1920, people were flying.
Where were they flying to?
Where were they flying? To the other side. I don't know. I don't know. But
what?
Yeah. Queensland and Northern Territory Aerial Services.
Man.
Qantas. It's a great airline by all accounts. I've never flown on Qantas, but I hear good things.
Okay.
Just like I hear good things about Australia. And all of you are so wonderful and I love you all so much. So,
yeah.
Okay. We are flying on a plane that we maybe never talked about before. It's too hot to remember things. So an A380. So an A380, A for Airbus, right? A380 is like Airbus's tacky response to the 747 30 years late. I don't, sorry.
Yeah.
But like it's huge. It is like the biggest passenger like commercial aircraft ever made. It's a double decker. Qantas has them, Emirates has them, other people have them. Those are just the ones that are like, when I think of an A380, I think of them with that branding. But
yeah.
It's a double decker. Look on your phone right now, A380 versus 747, and tell me that it isn't a million times uglier. But I do love big plane. I love plane with stairs, inside plane. So good for you. Like, good job,
yeah,
A380.
Yeah.
They're huge, 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 huge planes, right? And unlike a 747 that like has a tasteful like waist because the upper deck is not actually like all the way to the end of the plane. Mm. An A380, it's actually like a true, like a second floor, not like just a little extra upstairs. So it, they're big, huge planes, four engines, just like a 747. Great. We're flying from Heathrow in London to Singapore to Sydney, Australia. So boop, boop, boop. And we have already flown from Heathrow to Singapore. So we left last night. We got on the plane, left London, arrived at Singapore this morning, bright and early, because flights from west to east usually leave at night and arrive in the morning. And that's exactly what we did. But now we're still going west to east and not, whatever, it's fine. It's 7.5 hours about. So it's not a huge, like, not a bad flight, right? Yeah. The remaining leg is not that bad. Maybe kind of miserable after you've already flown from Heathrow to Singapore. But we got four 439 souls on board.
Whoa.
Right. A lot of people. The Qantas A380s seat around 470 if you have every single seat filled. So we're not totally packed to the rafters. My guess is that the first floor where like economy and premium economy are is probably very, very close, like very tight. And the second floor probably not as bad because it's the first floor level or deck or whatever you want to call it. I'm sweating already.
Same.
It is 5 minutes in. It's fine. So we got 439 souls on board. 29 of those are the crew. So lots of flight attendants to take care of all those people. And because this flight is like a treated by the airline like one big continuous flight, that's partially because, you know, people need to take a nap. Like you can't just work for 30 hours straight, right? So right. 29 crew, 24 of those are flight attendants and 5 are pilots. And 5 pilots.
That's a lot.
Don't hate that necessarily, right? No, that seems kind of good for one of our stories, kind of good, right? We've got the captain. Captain's name is Richard. Richard is 53. He's been flying since he was 35. Nope. God help me. He's been flying for 35 years.
Oh.
Because he's been flying since he was 18.
Beautiful.
And he just loves it. And he's a captain for Qantas. And he used to fly the 747. And now he's on the worst version of the 747. So it's great. The first officer's name is Matt. The second officer, so the person who's there to make sure that the pilots get their rest, his name is Mark. And then there's also so we talked about check airmen, like the person who like basically will ride along with you and just observe your processes, make sure that you're doing everything right, maybe answer questions, but like, you know, the audit, right? The internal audit for pilots. And a check airman trainee, so somebody who's watching him so he can learn how to do that job.
Oh my gosh. So lots of watching today.
Lots of watching, lots of learning. It's a beautiful day of learning. I did not say yet. It's November 4th, 2010. November 4th, 2010. So very recent. And this plane, this aircraft, this particular A380 was only born in 2008. So it's very new. And that's when most of these pilots, so like Richard, the captain, he started like with this like harvest of A380s. So he's been flying an A380 for about 2 years. Matt worked for another airline, has actually, like the first officer actually has more experience on the A380. We've got all these like check airmen and check airmen trainee and second officer and all of this. And it can get confusing, like who's in charge, right? Like who's in charge? If the person who's auditing you, that is like an authority figure in your life, right? But who is the person in charge on this flight that we are about to do from Singapore to Sydney? And Richard actually like takes a moment while they're getting ready to take off again, and says, like, he said this when they left Heathrow 2. He says, you know, just to establish the chain of command for clarity, you know, not like I'm the boss like that, but just for clarity, I'm the captain. I'm the top.
Yeah.
The first officer is number two. The second officer is number three. And check airmen, you know, figure it out amongst yourselves. Like, I don't know, you know, right. Whatever. But he establishes the chain of command. The people who are actually sitting in the two seats, like flying this plane, are Captain Richard on the left side, where captains sit, and Matt sitting on the right side. Everybody else is in a jump seat behind them for takeoff. Somebody will go back and take a nap after they get into the air. But for takeoff, everyone's in the cockpit. So, establish this, load up, people on board, fuel on board. The plane is so gloriously huge, so much fuel, so many people. Let's go to Australia. And they take off at around like 9:55, 9:56. They're in the air. And it is a beautiful, beautiful day in Singapore. And I've never been to Singapore, but by all accounts,
yeah,
beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, we love it. Gorgeous. So they are ascending up through the air, going home. They pull up the gear. They are like using the autopilot, obviously, as they, you know, ascend and just watching everything. Everything looks good. They're crossing through 7,000 feet on their way up to their cruising altitude, and bam! Huge explosion on the left side of the plane, and then another one after it. Bam! Like double boom boom. This explosion shakes the plane. Everything lights up on their screen, right? So Richard is the pilot in command. He is the captain. He first thing he does, good job, he boops the autopilot and tells them, like, hey, stop ascending. Let's just hold this because, like, yeah, something just happened. Boop. And he says, like, I have control. And he's like, starts to like scan the monitors, right? All of the different boops and beeps and lights and everything that's in front of them. And all there's 10 eyes, 5 brains in this cockpit. Everybody looks. And the first thing that you would notice in this case, the first thing they see is just that engine 2, something's wrong. Engine 2, something bad. Right. Now, in the cabin where the passengers are sitting on the first level, the passengers who are sitting behind the left wing can see the engine 2. So if you imagine looking down at the plane, the engines from left to right are 1, 2, 3, 4. So engine 1 is the furthest on the left, then engine 2, engine 3, engine 4. Engine 2 has exploded, and a lot of it has just fucked off into nowhere. And when it exploded, it shot through into the fuselage, but thank God not through the fuselage, spewing out jet fuel.
Oh my God.
Spewing out jet fuel. So that's what the passengers can see and what any flight attendants who look can see. But the 5 people in the cockpit can't see that from their vantage point. So they are looking at their screens, looking at the information they got and flying the plane, right? ECAM. This is something we've talked about, the electronic computer airplane monitoring. That's not right, guys. It's a million degrees and I didn't write it down. ECAM is the computer, right? That tells them, like, oh, something's wrong. Oh, something's wrong, right? Okay, that thing is, like, lit up, obviously. Okay, well, that's what first officers are for, right? So, like, Richard is flying the plane, looking at what he's got to look at, doing what he's got to do, tells Matt, the first officer, okay, you start to go through the ECAM messages. And Matt says, like, you got it, boss, and like starts to go through them, and he's like, oh, there's a lot of messages. Oh my gosh. Oh, a lot. So it is lit up. Okay, they're staying at 7,000 feet. It's just one engine. There's 3 engines for a reason. They just left Singapore. They call air traffic control and tell them, like, declare an emergency. Hey, we're going to come back to Singapore. We're not going to turn that around. We're just going to, like, figure this out, right? We're going to see what's going on, see what these ECAM messages are all about. Matt is like, boop, boop, booping through the ECAM messages and like, oh man, there are a lot of ECAM messages and they're not all about the engine. Like there's a lot. There are a lot of ECAM messages and they're alerts about things that have nothing to do with the engines. And he's just boop, 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 boop. Now in Sydney, right now in Sydney, at this moment in 2023 and back then in 2010, there is like a big office somewhere in Sydney where they have on their screens all of the ECAMs for all of the planes everywhere. They're out there doing their thing.
Oh, wow.
So that if, yeah, so they can see live what's happening on the planes, see, and help them out, give them a call and say, hey, do you see this? So nice, right? What a great service.
Yeah.
And they see, oh, something is wrong with that plane. Okay. Qantas 32. I don't think I said Qantas 32. Something's going on with Qantas 32. They just took off. A lot of messages on their ECAM and they go to call the pilots and they can't get through. The sat phone is not working on the Qantas flight. These are probably related concepts, right? Like probably not whatever. The people in the cockpit don't know that though, right? So they're just in there trying to figure stuff out. Just doing a little bit of troubleshooting. Matt is kind of saying like, hey guys, there are a lot of ECAM messages, like a lot, like a lot of ECAM messages. And they're like, okay, so let's start to go through them. He like invokes the help of the other pilots on board and they are starting to go through them and trying to like prioritize and figure it out. Going through like the engine shutdown checklist, like doing all of the, just the systematized way that you handle problems on a plane and getting the extra help of the other three brains on board going through it. Below there is a little Indonesian island called Batam, just this little Indonesian island, not that far from Singapore, certainly not that far if you're on a plane. Hellfire starts to rain down on this little island when that engine exploded and fucked off into a million pieces. It rained down onto this little island. It is 10 a.m. on a Thursday.
Jeez.
There is a school full of kids because it's 10 a.m. on a Thursday. The pieces of the plane crash through the roof of the school.
Why is it always schools?
It's always a school.
It's always.
It crashes into the school. Thank God does not hit anybody, but does like land extremely close to one kindergarten aged boy just sitting there coloring. And then hellfire rains down. People across the island start obviously taking pictures of this. Hey, this crashed through my roof. Like, oh my gosh. And it's Qantas. And a lot of the pieces that rain down have recognizable Qantas insignia on them.
Oh my God.
And so people are taking a picture and posting it online. And the media is like, oh boy, something's happening. And they start to like report on it. And in a car somewhere in Australia, the CEO of Qantas is driving around and somebody else in the car says, oh my God, boss, the stock price just like fell to hell.
Something
is happening. And the CEO is like, what's going on? And calls the office or whatever. And the office is like, maybe related. We have this ECAM, lots of messages on this ECAM, but we can't get in touch with the pilots and like we're working on it. And so everybody like on Earth knows that something weird is happening with this plane, but nobody's talking to the pilots because they can't get through to them besides air traffic control. Traffic control, meanwhile, also gets a call from like news people in Indonesia saying like, oh, hey, maybe one of your planes is falling apart. Something's wrong. And so the air traffic control has already been informed, like the Qantas flight already declared an emergency. He can see on his like panel, his radar, that like the plane's still in the air. And it's like, OK, well, you know, good news, didn't crash, still up there. Bad news, pieces are falling. That's not good. So the pilots, his communications with the pilots have actually been pretty chill. Like the pilots are consummate professionals, speaking like calmly to air traffic control, just amazing, keeping them in the loop or whatever, doing their thing, going through these ECAM messages. Okay, so the pilots are up there. The air traffic controller is informed that a bunch of pieces of the plane fell not only onto this island in Indonesia, but also specifically that it fell through the roof of a school at 10 a.m. on a Thursday. And the air traffic controller wisely does not like call the people on the plane and tell them like, hey, you're like, you know, whatever, you're a plague right now. You know, they don't need to know that. He just keeps that to himself. Okay. So meanwhile, back up on the plane in the cockpit, going through these ECAM messages, is a lot, but there's a very pressing issue, which is that, again, what makes it theoretically not a big deal to lose an engine when you have four is that you have three other engines. But as they're looking at it, for some reason, engines one and four, the two engines that are the furthest away from the interior of the plane,
yeah,
both of them are like dying. Something is wrong with them. They're, instead of being like totally fine, they're in degraded mode, meaning there's a bunch of like things that engines are supposed to do, like thrust reversers would be one that you would want if you were trying to land, lots of things like that. They can't do that, and they're not producing a lot of power. And engine three, so engines one and four, degraded mode. Engine two, fucked off to Indonesia. Engine three, the engine that is closest to the right side of the plane, that engine is doing the best, but it's in alternate mode, meaning that it is also like giving you a heads up, like, hey guys, like, I don't feel so good. Like, yeah, I'm, you know, maybe doing better than some of my brethren, but like, I don't feel great. And so they are trying to figure out what's wrong with the engines. What's wrong with the other engines? Like, oh, what do we do?
Right.
And Matt is, again, more experienced than even the captain on the A380, a great pilot. We love Matt. Matt is not wanting to panic himself or anyone else, but like, oh my God, guys, there's a lot of ECAM messages.
Yeah.
There are more than 100, more than 100
oh
ECAM
God.
Messages and fewer than one totally functional engine. And there's 430 passengers back there. And not good. So they just have to make this kind of a fast decision, right? So they have to decide, do we just turn around and land and not deal with the ECAM messages and not figure out what's wrong with the engines and not figure out what actually happened? Do we just turn around and land and figure it out on the ground? Or do we stay up in the air and systematically go through all of this so that we can figure out what's happening and understand like the limitations of this aircraft before we try to do something as dangerous as landing? And that is not an easy decision to make.
No.
Like, what?
Yeah, there's one please. Wing, though. Like, how are they flying? Mm. How are they in the air?
So the wing, I'm so glad you said that. So engine, or the wing carrying engine two, the wing is not destroyed, but it is bashed. So it's had much better days, but
yeah,
it's not like gone. It's the wing is there, carrying one of the engines that's in degraded mode and not really doing a very good job. And like the husk of the engine two that exploded and started this whole mess, right?
Right.
But it is gushing fuel.
Right.
Gushing fuel. But they don't totally know that yet, right?
Yeah.
Like they're like trying to sort it out, but they have not sorted it out. So they have to make this extremely high stakes decision,
yeah,
about whether to just let God sort it out, turn it around and put it on the ground, or figure out what's going on to the best of our abilities so we know what's going to happen when we land.
Right.
Right. So we know, can we even control the plane? What do we have? Brakes? Do we have, like, what's happening with our plane? Right. And Richard as he established, is the captain and it is his final decision. And he says, I think we have to stay in the air and figure out what's going on this aircraft before we try to land it. And he makes that decision. And again, incredibly high stakes. I don't know what kinds of thoughts go through these the pilots' minds, but there are five of them. And I cannot, I mean, what I thought looking at this was like Swiss Air 111, basically horrific tragedy. Like they thought they had more time and thought they could like figure it out and go through the procedures. And it's not even a mistake. They couldn't have made it back onto the ground, but still, right? Like there's something like that. Or I'm sure examples that just don't spring to my mind in this moment, but examples where they've tried to just turn around and put it back on the ground immediately because they just know something is wrong and they're close to the airport and crashed, right? So like these are you don't know,
right?
And Richard says we're gonna stay in the air and we're gonna figure out what we can figure out and then we're gonna land. So they make that decision, he makes that decision, they all assent to that decision. And so they call air traffic control and tell air traffic control, like, okay, we are going to stay in the air. We're going to aim for like 30 minutes to go through all of these ECAM messages, to go through our procedures, to test the controllability of the aircraft, to figure out what we have and what we don't have. And then we're going to land. Oh my God. Can you please keep us in like a holding pattern close to the airport? Right. That's what they ask for, like really close to the airport. And the captain, Richard, like actually specifies within gliding distance because he's looking at these engines and he's thinking, I don't know if when it comes to it, if we're going to have engines.
Right.
So within gliding, not just close, but within gliding distance. And the air traffic controller, whose job is to, whose very high pressure job is to support these pilots in this emergency situation, he knows what the pilots on board don't know, which is that they have been raining down chunks of plane on Indonesia, right, on this little island, right? So they want to stay close to the airport. And it's like, okay, yes, you got it. He decides to tell them because it is information that maybe they need.
Yeah.
Pieces of the plane have been fallen onto
kindergartners,
right? Like pieces of the plane have dropped onto the earth where people live. So I'm going to keep you over the water.
Yeah.
But like, I'm going to keep you close. Like, thank God this is Indonesia, not Sioux Falls. Like, you got it, right? Yeah. Like, we can do both.
Lots
right?
of water.
So, or this is Singapore. Yeah. We got water close, right there. So close to the airport. So, yes, just so you know, we want to keep you over the water because maybe you're dropping pieces of yourself. The pilots on board, like, this, there is an unfathomable deluge of information screaming at them constantly, right? And this voice, the only voice that they've heard because their company can't call them, because they can't call maintenance, they can't use other resources. The only person tells them a new piece of information, which is that pieces of the plane have fallen onto a town in Indonesia. And they like kind of take it in real quick and are like, oh no, like, okay, can't deal with that right now. Okay, over the water, you got it. Like, and they enter their holding pattern over the water, but very close to Singapore airport. So they start to systematically go through everything. So, okay, engine two, where all these problems started. We know that one's the worst off. They haven't seen it. They don't know that that is specifically what's been falling. They haven't seen it. They don't know exactly what's going on over there.
Yeah.
But some of these ECAM messages are saying that it's maybe on fire, maybe hot. That's not good, right? So they, all of this obviously happened a lot faster than I'm telling it, but they pull the fire. There's two fire extinguishers per engine. They pull the first one and what they're supposed to get is like a confirmation that it's been like, on the engine to put the fire out. Nothing. They pull the second one, nothing. And they're like, ooh, they don't know what part is broken. So they don't know, did the fire extinguishers go off and just the part the systems in the plane that give us the confirmation just isn't functioning? Did they not go off? Is the plane even on, is the engine even on fire? They don't know any of this. In fact, the extinguishers have fallen onto Indonesia. So that's what has actually happened. They are not there.
Shit.
So, but the plane is also, the engine is also not on fire, thank God, because if it was, we would be in way bigger trouble because that wing is gushing fuel. So they start to like systematically go through these ECAM messages, engine two, we don't really know. And at some point they decide like, okay, wait, no, we have to like see this. We have to look at it. We have to see it with our eyes and look at what is going on with that engine. We have to look at the wing. We have to actually know what's happening, right? Because some of the ECAM messages they're getting are saying like, hey, so where fuel is stored, right? Fuel is stored in like the belly and like of the plane, but a lot of fuel is stored in each of the wings, mm-hmm. right? Which is a great spot for it, right? Really, it is. That's where the engines are. Perfect, right? So that's where a lot of the fuel is supposed to live. And this engine two, the left side of the plane, that left wing is getting a little light. And the plane is telling them like, hey, open up the thing so that some of the fuel on the right side of the plane can dribble over onto the left side. So you can like level out because the plane is actually not that easy to control when it's lopsided and there's way more weight on one side than on the other. And they're like, okay, there's just, we can't like make intelligent decisions about these messages without looking at this damage. And so they say, second officer, Mark, they're like, Marky boy, this is your moment. Go look at it. Tell us what you see. Okay. So Mark gets like, opens the cockpit door, leaves the cockpit. And pretty immediately when he walks out, one of the first class passengers, like kind of is just like, hey, can you come here? So this passenger is actually a Qantas pilot himself who is non-revving to go home probably, right? And gets to sit in first class, which is great. We love that, right? He, now on Qantas, somebody had the amazing idea to put a camera on the tail of the plane, right? Put a camera on the tail of the plane so that passengers on their TV screens can see the plane flying over. Yeah. Like, just look down and see. Isn't that cool? Like, because it's aimed, like, down so it can see, like, the body of the plane. Now, this feature is not available in the cockpit for some reason. They don't have access to this camera. Why? But this fellow Qantas pilot hails Mark, the second officer, and is like, hey, come look at this. And Mark walks over and this pilot has the screen that's showing the camera looking down at the plane pulled up, and you can see that engine two is not all present and fuel gushing out of the wing. And Mark says, thanks for letting me know, and goes downstairs so that he can look out the window and see it. And again, guys, every single passenger on this plane, pilot or not, non-rev or not, of any age, oh my gosh, right? If you are experiencing this, right, the explosion and the little explosion right after it, the like lesser explosion right after it, and now just like flying in circles over the ocean, and now a pilot is just like coming down to check. Right. Okay, again, very scary. So he like comes down and like leans over the passengers who have to be maybe the scaredest passengers on the plane because they're the ones who have the best view of what's happening. And he looks out the window and the fuel is gushing out so massively and aggressively. It is 2 feet wide, like gush,
like a waterfall.
Like a waterfall, like a nice, if you had a 2 foot waterfall, like 2 foot beautiful. Wide waterfall in your house, oh my God, or in your backyard, amazing. No, fuel, just forcefully spewing out, just with, and Mark says like, pardon me, thanks for letting me look out the window, and like goes up the stairs and goes back into the cockpit and is like, oh, and like describes what he has seen. And they agree that they should not open the valve to let the fuel like run from the right side of the plane to the left side of the plane. They agree on that. So on to the next ECAM message. For over an hour. Over an hour. They fly in circles over the ocean and go through all of these ECAM messages and go through all of their procedures, and they practice, they like test different systems on their plane. They figure out what they have and what they don't have. They figure out like how the controllability, and it is, there's a lot of bad news in there. Okay. The engines do not perk up. The three remaining engines don't, like, they're still like two of them in degraded mode, engine three in alternate mode. So the engines are partial, to say the least. They don't have slats. They don't have thrust reversers, right, on the engines that are not functioning, only on engine three. The plane, at some point, they realize that one of the hydraulic lines got cut. And so some of the hydraulic systems are not functioning. Not as bad as the last story we told. It's not like all of the hydraulic fuel of the entire plane, because thank God, this aircraft was made in 2008 and the hydraulic systems are separate enough that you can't, like, it'd be much harder to lose all of them. But one of them is gone. And part of that is affecting their ability to, like, use slats. So they're going to have to land faster. And then once they touch down, after not being able to slow down as much as they would like to while landing, they are not going to be able to use their thrust reversers. So they have less braking power and they have to land faster. Okay, well, let's dump fuel, right? I know that we are already dumping fuel in a very unpleasant way, but we need to dump more of it. Because imagine that, guys, just for a second. This plane is so big. Imagine how much fuel this plane had to take on board. Before takeoff. Like, really think about that. Because this plane has been gushing fuel out 2 feet wide, a waterfall of fuel spewing out of one of the wings for over an hour. And they still need to dump more fuel using, like, the specific mechanism for dumping fuel so they can dump it faster and more efficiently, because they are currently 50 tons overweight. And so they need to use that system to dump more fuel. So imagine how much fuel you, like, started with. It's insane. So they go to dump fuel, and it turns out their ability to dump fuel is one of the systems that's not functioning. They can't dump fuel. So what they're spewing out of the left wing is the only place they can dump fuel. Another problem with that is that the left side has become a lot lighter than the right side. So physically, like, controlling the plane, like, just that aspect of it is more uncomfortable. And so as they get through every single ECAM message, they get through every single, like, checklist that they need to, they're ready. But there's a lot of bad news. So they call Singapore and they say, like, okay, like, you know, we're moving toward, like, being ready to land. Like, they start to get lined up. They say, like, we want a really, really long final approach, like 20 miles. And so the air traffic controller is getting that ready for them. Now, as they prepare for landing, any pilot on any flight is going to have to do some math to figure out their landing distance, like, how much runway do they need to land, right? Like, with their stopping distance, right? And on a futuristic plane, like an A380 born in 2008, on this aircraft, they've got, like, a computerized system where it will just tell them, in theory, like, it, the brain of the computer of the plane will let them know, so they don't have to do all of the math. And they, like, go, like, okay, let's see, because they get the longest runway at Singapore, but they are the biggest commercial plane ever made. They're huge. They're full of people and they're full of fuel. They're 50 tons overweight. Gosh. And they already need an extremely long runway because they're a massive aircraft. So they like boop, boop, like ask the computer what's our landing distance? Like how much with like all these factors? And the computer goes like, oh, like, damn, man, that's crazy. And they're like, no, like, what's our landing distance? Like, yeah. How long do we need? And the computer's like, yeah, wow. Sorry to hear that, man. Like, the computer can't figure it out. The computer literally cannot, with all of these factors, with all of the different things that, like, are wrong with this plane, with all of these different pieces, the computer is truly just like, wow, sorry to hear that. Like, nothing. Mm. No answer, no range, no nothing. And so now, and God bless him, I don't know why Matt is the one I'm connecting to on this plane, but I just think about that thing where there's like a really big thing happening, right? Mm. Something, and it definitely is the thing that needs everyone's attention. Like, you do have to focus on it, but there's like a problem sneaking up on you. Yep. And you're kind of like, oh, I don't know how much attention this seems. Yeah. I don't want to interrupt you, but. And the computer has just been just torturing Matt all day.
Yeah.
And now it just won't tell them how. So they start to systematically remove some of the variables. So some of the stuff that is wrong with the plane, they start to like unselect it so that it like doesn't get counted in the like equation.
Mm.
And they start with like things that they feel like are probably the least relevant, right? Like factors that are the least likely to impact how much runway you need to come to a stop while landing. And so they like take off some of those things that like probably aren't going to have a big impact. Ask the computer again. Computer is like, wow, so sorry, like, bye. And like doesn't give them an answer. So they have to like start removing stuff that is for sure relevant, like stuff that will impact how much runway they need. They have to start to remove those in order of like least important to most important.
Yeah.
And finally, the computer spits out a runway, like a landing distance that they need to come to a stop that's around 400 feet less than the longest runway at Singapore. So after removing variables, including some variables that are definitely going to affect how much runway they need, it says that they have, I think it was 130 meters for the rest of you, like that, it's like, that is, and that's if you land perfectly, like exactly on like the beginning of the runway, you don't accidentally eat any runway while you're trying to land. That's if everything goes just right. That's if the wind doesn't change. That's if some of the problems we're having are not real. Like it's not good news. And so they call the flight attendants and tell them to prepare the plane for we might go off the runway. Yeah. Like we might overrun the runway because we just might literally not be able to stop fast enough. And so I just think about these flight attendants have been trying to, who are on the plane, whose lives are just as much in danger as everyone else, maybe more because they're the only people on the plane who are walking around, right? And these flight attendants have to like, they've been doing like everything they can to keep everybody as calm as possible. They've been as reassuring as possible. They obviously have to go over like emergency landing protocols, but now they're having to go over this additional thing, like this additional information about like if we run off the runway and have to evacuate immediately. They have to go back and start to prep everyone for that. They call air traffic control, give them the news. They've got like EMS ready, the fire chief ready. They know that it's spewing fuel out and will still be spewing fuel out when they land. The air traffic controller puts them on a 20-mile short final, meaning like they're lined up with the runway 20 miles out. So they have a long time to like, they're because of the loss of some of the hydraulics, the plane is sluggish because of like all of these different things. They drop the landing gear. They start to like do a little bit of like last minute testing of like how controllable the aircraft feels now that the gear is fallen. Thank God, like the gravity system did lock the gear into place. They're coming in. They touch down right at the beginning of the runway. Oh. They hit it really well. As soon as they touch down, they pull the thrust reversers on engine three, the one and only engine that they have it for. And Richard just slams his foot into the brake. This is extremely dangerous because it is going to create a ton of heat. And Richard knows that. And Richard knows that the wing right next to the landing gear that he is slamming the brakes down on is spewing fuel, but there's no other way. Otherwise, they're just going to plow into a building and blow up, right? So it's basically just outrunning death. He like pushes his foot, bam, down as far as it'll go, max brakes. Matt, God bless him, right next to him. Matt says like, hey, full brakes, right? Full brakes, max brakes, max braking, max braking. And Richard's like, I am, Matt, this is max braking. And Matt doesn't believe him and pushes his foot down because they both have the brakes and they're like, they're unified. So if you push down one, the other side goes down. And Matt like pushes his foot down and realizes that it is all the way to the floor. And that is max braking. And they're all just like, feeling the plane slow down, but not slow down fast enough. And they like the runway. Singapore is a huge, beautiful airport, big, long runway made for these planes, but not these conditions. And the plane like barrels down the runway and they can feel it start to slow. They can feel it start to slow and they're getting close and they realize, okay, like the plane is going to come to a stop. We're not going to overrun. And the plane comes to a stop about 500 feet shy of the end of the runway. So they come to a stop and they shut off the engines. They expect the fire crews to come like right over and start like blasting the plane. That's what they're expecting. But the fire crews don't. And they look at they've got a temperature sensor, a thermometer on the brakes so they can see the temperature. Over 900 degrees Celsius. Over extremely close, if not 1700 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oh my God.
Blazing hot brakes from the sheer force of stopping this plane. Fuel is still spewing out of the left side, and that fuel is starting to pool under the plane now that they've stopped. And that fuel is going to come into contact with the brakes and it's going to ignite. And it is extremely dangerous to be on this plane. And they call the fire crews and they're like, hey, like, come on, like, blast, like, the brakes are really hot. And the fire crew is like, hey, you got to turn off all the engines. Engine three is still running. It's still running. And they said, no, it's not. Or no, engine one is still running. And Richard is like, no, it's not still running. We've turned them all off. It is not still running. And the fire crew is like, dude, I'm sorry. Like, I'm looking at it and I can see that it's still running and we can't approach it because we're going to get sucked into it and die and that's going to explode. If we get sucked into it, it's going to explode and we're all going to be dead anyway. Like, we can't.
Right.
And Richard pops. He's so mad. He pops the window open because they do have that like escape window next to them. He shoves the window open, looks out and can see the engine one is still running and he screams, fuck! And he comes back in and they start like, argh! And they're like trying to figure out because they are in extreme danger. Yeah. This is the most dangerous part of this entire thing. They're on the ground, but they are trapped inside this plane. They can't evacuate and it is going to ignite.
Yeah, there's gas everywhere.
Trying everything to shut these engines off, including pulling the lever that should just completely cut off the engine from fuel so it will just get starved of fuel. Nothing. They cannot get this stupid fucking degraded mode engine to turn off. Ugh. And they sit there for 13 minutes.
Oh my 13 God. 13
minutes spewing fuel. The fire crews start to like shoot foam from like a distance onto the brakes to try to like get it to cool them off or at least keep them from igniting. So they're like spraying foam onto the brakes from far away. And they call their company on their cell phone from their pocket because it's the only way they can get in touch with their company that controls like the air stairs that they need to evacuate.
Yeah.
So the company sends the buses out, but they can't get that close. And finally, like the captain says, like, we have to evacuate. We're going to evacuate on the right side of the plane. Tell everyone to run, to yeah. get off that plane and run away from it because A, it might ignite, but B, there's a massive engine still running. It's extremely dangerous. Everybody starts to like pour off the plane Jesus. And run. Every single passenger, every single crew member finally gets off. Engine one is still running. Engine one runs for 3 more hours.
No.
For 3 more hours, it runs. They finally, the fire crews are sitting there for hours. Just that what? Finally, they literally smother it with so much foam that it finally dies.
Oh my God.
Everybody oh lived. Everybody lived.
Incredible. Jeez. No, I hate those situations so much oh. where you're so close.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my God. And then to add the 3 more hours after that, like, fuck you. Fuck you, engine. Oh.
Fuck you.
Oh my
you
God.
Weren't even doing that good of a job. Right. Stop doing it. That, honestly, I might delete this from the episode, but honestly, that thing, like people who won't stop doing something, even though they're not very good at it.
Oh my God.
Maybe it's like a self-criticism, but like stop. That thing where you're like, no, it's my project. I'm not going to stop. And you just keep doing it. And it's like, well, you're fucking it up for yep. everyone else. Stop it. Yep. Like, just let someone else do it. Like, just stop. Stop working so hard. Yep. Stop. So that's, yeah, engine one is... fired.
Yeah. Immediately.
Oh, all those HR. People a... calling HR. Calling HR. I'm done. Oh my wow. gosh. Everyone lived, even in Batam on the island,
beautiful.
The Indonesian island. They all lived. Great. So
everyone just eating fuel fish for a little bit. That's all.
Ooh, a little bit of fuel fish.
You know. But everyone yeah. lived like.
Yeah.
Incredible that they were able to stop yeah. the plane and
it didn't ignite. Oh my gosh. It's so
honestly,
yeah.
Popping out the window is going to yeah. be my favorite every time, no matter what. Like
it's I wish, so relatable.
I wish, yes. Like, and then just fuck.
Right. Anything at all. Anything where they're like, I have to look at this with my own eyes.
Yeah.
Always my favorite.
Yeah.
Like, it's horrible and nauseating and, like, sickening. But that, like, just, like...
Let me
I know
look
that
at this.
That can't yeah. be true. Yeah. yeah. like, And,
In the so, middle yeah. of the worst timing possible. Like, just...
Oh, 400. I think the flight attendants, can you imagine
oh my
that,
God.
Like... the like half an hour ultimately that they were on the ground inside that aircraft. Can you imagine after all of that as a passenger, you're stuck on the plane.
Seriously.
And again, there's over 400 passengers and 24 flight attendants. And those 24 flight attendants have to keep like order and keep everyone from jumping off the plane.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah.
If every single one of those flight attendants didn't get like the bonus
yeah.
of the century.
Truly.
Like if the stupid CEO in his stupid car didn't right. give his bonus divided evenly amongst the crew. Like,
yeah.
Mm. So that like
every year for now until forever.
Ooh, right. Forever. Right. Into perpetuity. So the little weird thing. So because that stupid engine didn't shut off for 3 hours, we don't have the CVR from this plane at all because it just kept running.
Piece of shit.
So the like hour or whatever it has on it that it records before it starts to tape over itself, it taped over itself for hours with nobody even in there. Jeez. So we don't have a CVR. So like all of that stuff is like a best estimate. It's a description of like what people remember, how they remember it, whatever.
Yeah.
The including the like fuck like that yeah. was he it was so funny. There was like an Australian like news channel, which there no one is more savage.
Oh my God. Australia's 60 Minutes.
Australian Genesis. Oh, it's shocking.
YouTube it. 10 out of 10.
I feel so, yes. Australian 60 Minutes. I feel so, I have to turn it off sometimes. Yeah. I'm so uncomfortable.
It's secondhand embarrassment. They're just roasting yes. the shit out of people.
Just, oh like my gosh.
This dumb like, fuck of a parent decided.
Right, it's exactly.
Like the kid accidentally like drowned in a pool or something. It's like, oh my right. God.
Right. Like, why did you wake up every day and decide to be so stupid? Right. Like, just so savage. But
most of the time deserved, I will say.
I mean, they cover some rough people. Yeah. And it's shocking that those people agree to sit down with them for an interview.
Shocking.
But I was watching whatever the 60 minute, not 60 minutes, but one of like an Australian news show about this, and the captain is like describing it, and he's like, I, you know, he's very calm in the interview. He's like, I popped it open and looked and saw that it was still running, and I uttered an expletive. And it's just like, yeah, like yeah. just so calm.
Yeah.
Because yeah, and that is like your natural state. But listen, if there's ever a time, these are the moments
the
where
yeah.
So what happened, right? Like what happened? So these four engines are made by Rolls-Royce, right? Mercedes-Benz and Rolls-Royce
Fancy.
Both make lots of make aircraft engines.
Yeah.
So does Saab, I guess. I don't know. We'll talk about that another time. Yeah. Someone check my work. But a lot of car manufacturers also make engine manufacturers, especially luxury brands or whatever, right? And so the Rolls-Royce produced these engines called the Trent 900. And that is like Rolls-Royce Trent 900. I feel like that that engine like colonized
yeah.
the Americas.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
so whatever.
Yeah.
But the Trent 900, these engines, when they reconstruct it, when they collect all of the pieces from Indonesia, when they inspect it, when they realize that. So why did it happen? Engines explode sometimes, but engines are very, very carefully designed to have contained explosions. So exactly this situation doesn't happen. The engine is not supposed to be able to explode and actually like pop out.
Mm.
By the way, the two explosions, that was the first explosion, and then the pieces of the engine breaking the sound barrier.
No.
Breaking the sound barrier. And shoving into all over the world, right? So
thank God
it didn't like breach the fuselage, like it didn't come into the cabin. But when it exploded, it just cut off a bunch of different systems. It cut off like one of the hydraulic lines. It cut off like a bunch, like a whole like knot of wires, and just severed all of them, which is why they didn't have their like satellite phone or like their satellite communication. There's a bunch of stuff they didn't have because of that, not to mention the obvious other problems, right? So
yeah.
Why did it have this? Like, what happened, Rolls-Royce? So Rolls-Royce, I don't know. Their decision, the way they decided to handle this situation, was to say nothing. They basically were like, we will offer as little information as possible.
Yeah.
And we will speak to the media never. So, like, that was their thing, which Qantas loved because that made them look way better because they could be like, oh, like, it's not us, it's this.
Right.
So this engine, right, basically what it on this particular engine that actually exploded, engine two of this plane, right? The engine, just one of the pipes that that had oil in it, had a manufacturing defect and had cracked and had leaked oil. And the oil had leaked onto the turbine, which is incredibly hot.
Yeah.
And it had ignited, and the fire had, so it had like caught fire, and the fire had like degraded the engine turbines themselves and like weakened them. So the force of ascending at an, like the force of those turbines turning as this unbelievably massive plane, so heavy and full of fuel and people and stuff, ascended into the sky, the weight of that, like the intensity of that spinning while on fire and degrading, it finally, the turbines broke and exploded, and uncontained engine failure, exploded, ripped through the engine, or ripped through the wing, ripped through like all of these different vital systems, just no one was even injured, and that's unbelievable.
That's crazy.
No one was injured on the ground. Yeah. No one was injured. No serious injuries. I'm sure people had like a bump or a bruise, right? Like just from like, I, who can walk down the stairs? 400 people can't walk downstairs and not get injured. It's just not possible, right? So like, but everybody lived, no serious injuries, stupid manufacturing defect. They, Rolls-Royce broke their silence to say like, oh, because Qantas said, we're not going to fly any more of our A380s. We're going to ground the entire fleet. And then the Australian government is like, yeah, you are. And so is everyone else. And then like everyone, Airbus was like, yeah, good idea. And like, so they're all just grounded. And so Rolls-Royce is like, let us take a look at them. And so there were around 125, that number does not work, but I don't have an explanation. So there was around 125 of these Trent 900 Rolls-Royce engines in use by Qantas, just Qantas. Uh-huh. And they like sent them all, or Rolls-Royce came to them probably and inspected them, took them all apart, inspected them. 125-ish, 53 of them had this manufacturing defect.
No.
53 of them?
No. And they weren't going to fucking look at it?
They, I don't know. Or, I mean, yeah, I don't, hopefully we don't get like a letter, like a cease and desist from Rolls-Royce. Oh, we'll see what happens. Nobody tell them we exist.
Rolls-Royce, give me a car.
Yeah, right. You want me to take it down? Give me a car.
Is and that, pay for gas that, for life.
Yeah, exactly. No, I want solar panels. I don't know.
Yeah.
Figure it out. Whatever. Rolls-Royce.
Yeah.
Chop chop. We are the most influential aviation podcast in the world. And we say, like, give us a car.
Yeah, I like that you went environmental with it. I'm just like, every terrible option.
No. I just think so, like, good. Gas for life. Like, I don't want to, like, how, like, I'm thinking ahead.
Right.
Like, who's going to have gas in 50 years? Not me. Like, how, where will it even come from?
Just give me cash in forms of gas.
The cash value of gas for life would be way better, actually. I'm glad you thought of that. Yeah. That's good. So
fuck you,
that's not good.
Assist. Anyways.
Right. Please, but don't tell them we exist, guys. Please don't. No. I do not want to be perceived by them. But everybody lived, they fixed it.
Great.
A380s have not had, it's been all good since then. The pilots, right? So there's no CVR, which is not ideal to say the least, right? But they like have their interviews and their like debrief and like naps and like all of that, like all the processes. They had all that in Singapore. And then they're like going to fly back to Australia, which is where they live, right? Go home finally, which is, they were trying to go home right now on November 4th.
Right.
So they are going home, and Richard, the flight he took to get home, took off from Singapore. He's not flying it. He's a passenger, you know, he's sitting in a seat like a regular person. And it took off and had an engine failure on takeoff and had to come back to Singapore. But Singapore, their entire A380 fleet is grounded. And it took him like 3 more days to get to go home. That is unreasonable.
Oh, that's horrible.
I can't believe he waited around for a Qantas flight. I feel like someone, Singapore Airlines, yeah, they're going somebody. That way too. Like, just, yeah, I don't know. But he finally got home. He's still alive.
Wow.
The plane amazing. Is still alive.
Wow, still that's shocking. That's
good. Yeah. It cost like, it was like $160 million or something to repair it. And obviously they like sued Rolls-Royce, like Qantas sued Rolls-Royce and yeah. Qantas insurer sued Rolls-Royce and Rolls-Royce insurer sued them. And like the people, the passengers obviously sued. And it's just like a big
lawsuit. Yeah.
I don't know. Right. And like, like I had not previously thought about like something like this happens. And if you're like a local judge and you're just like, ugh.
Yeah.
Ugh. Can you guys just settle, please?
Settle.
Leave me out of it.
Please settle.
Just, you know you did wrong. Just give them the money.
Right.
It's fine. But, yeah. So that's Qantas Flight 32. Oh.
Thank God they all lived. That's so insane.
Oh, my gosh. It so, so, so easily could have been.
Yeah.
Like...
a lot of like, people.
Yeah.
If they hadn't have like, looked.
Yeah. Oh. Like. And I think about like any pilot on board a plane when something like this happens. Like that pilot who is in first class who is like, hey, Mark, do you want to look at this? Like that pilot. Yeah. I just think about all the stories where like there's been a pilot in the cabin and they like offer their help. And I just wonder if he was like, I'm a Qantas pilot if you need any help. And if they were like, there's actually like 5 people in there. Like, you know, like, thank you so much. Right. But like, maybe you can. Yeah. Or just like. Yeah. Or like, do you want to help us? Do you want to like talk to the passengers and help chill them out?
Right.
Do you want? It's fine. Yeah. We'll just. Do you want to hold my hand?
Right.
Like, you know, like just. Oh, so many little things, but.
Yeah.
It
incredible.
Is
incredible.
So I promised you around an hour.
Yeah.
And we are at that mark. And I want to keep my promise to you. I also want to hear the jury duty situation.
I was just going to say, speaking of
don't
settling.
Don't want to force it.
I mean,
oh, yes. I am so smooth, yeah. Mariah.
I mean, I am sweating into my eyeballs and now blind because for whatever reason.
For whatever reason, because it's 400 degrees in your room.
Yeah. Okay, jury duty, though. So, everyone knows jury duty, whatever. And you've done jury duty. You've done jury duty in New York City specifically, which is a different level of jury duty, right? Like,
way worse. It has to be worse. It
has to be, right? So, I'm like, shit, I've already postponed it because of work. You know, whatever. Can't postpone it again. I'm like, fuck it, I'm just going to go. I'm a half hour late because, of course, I'm a half fucking hour late. So I just stroll on the fuck in there and, you know, everything's fine. It's like normal jury duty, whatever, blah, blah, blah. They give you the stuff. You sit there for a couple of hours. They start to call people's names. Then we're getting to like around 11 a.m. and they're like getting through a lot of people. Like people had, I would say, my God, at least half of the people left to be like dismissed for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we're sitting there and then they're like, okay, if we call your name, we need you to go stand in this hall in a single file line. So I get called and I'm like with, I don't know, 50 mm-hmm. other people or whatever.
Yeah.
We're standing in this single file line.
Oh.
And they're like, criminal court needs you, so we have to go walk over there.
Ooh.
So we are 50 U.S. citizens.
Like, follow the leader.
Follow the fucking leader in the middle of Brooklyn from the civil court to the criminal court to the fucking Supreme Court, mind you.
Oh, my gosh.
Ugh. And they start. I mean, it was upstairs. It was on the sidewalk. It was 95 degrees. I felt terrible. Gosh. For like the elderly people who were in the group, like they like pulled one woman out and she had a cane. Everyone else they made walk over there. We're like being escorted by the fucking police. Then we have to go to the Supreme Court. We have to get like even more security checked.
Oh my gosh.
Then we go up, you know, everyone's waiting. They don't say anything. They don't tell us a single thing. No one says a word. Until 4 o'clock when the judge comes in and gives us a literal 15-minute speech about how important it was that we were there because our presence led to all of the cases that day settling so they didn't have to go to trial. And this bitch tried to frame it as like, oh, you guys, like just your mere presence. And she literally was like, go forth and tell others about your jury experience today. Like,
no,
bitch,
no.
What are you talking
court,
about?
But for criminal court, that means a bunch of people, like, hopefully it's because the, like, DA
right.
said, like, ooh, like, okay, I'm going to offer you something better. And not that people, like, pled guilty to things
right.
they didn't do.
Right. Ugh. And after making us walk, and not to mention it was so hot in there.
Oh.
No water. I was like, this is
no, they don't let you
other.
Go out anywhere.
No.
You're trapped.
You are trapped.
Could you be on your phone or did they
I
save
did,
the phones
thank God.
And stuff? Okay. Yeah.
And I brought I brought my Switch and coloring book. So that was
but
fun.
Like, what the hell? Okay, that it's
no,
not good news, Your Honor. Like it's not
it's
good.
Not.
Is it good news? Because again, if the DA was playing chicken
right.
and knew that they weren't gonna get a conviction, but they've been playing with these people's lives for years,
yes.
trying to get them to plead guilty to something they didn't do,
yep.
and the DA finally backed down, I guess that's kind of good news, maybe.
I feel
maybe,
like not. I feel
probably
like it's
not.
Probably the other way.
Probably not, right? So, like, actually, this sounds like terrible news because
right.
you just told us that a bunch of people literally, like, threw in the towel on proving their own innocence
yeah.
because we showed up. That's not
I don't
good
want
news,
that.
Your Honor.
Right.
Right.
I don't want
like,
that.
No thanks.
Nope.
No.
No thank you.
No, the Queen's jury duty, because like that, like I like sat on a jury that like
yeah.
deliberated and like came to like whatever for two people, which I don't totally get why they were combined. But the like they said at like the day one thing where it's just like cattle in a room and there's just like all of you or whatever.
Yeah.
They said something that I think they might always say whenever they said this to you, that like jury like. Engaging in jury duty usually makes people feel much better
yes.
about our judicial system.
Yeah.
I do not feel better.
No.
I feel
worse.
Much worse.
Much worse.
What? Much worse.
Yeah.
That cannot be true for New York City.
Horrifying.
That, it can't be true.
No.
Yeah, at all.
And yeah, no. Ugh. And then she went on to this rant about how, I mean, 15 minutes, okay? You're telling us we could leave early, but then you steal 15 minutes of my time? Anyways.
Oh, that's just bad public speaking.
Yeah.
That's just bad public speaking. Because they tell you that, like, that was that part of your, like, public speaking 101 class where it's like, don't
yeah.
tell people, like, I'll close after this and then keep talking. Like,
right.
no. Like, you don't signal that you're done until, like,
you
got, like,
done.
Two sentences
right.
left.
Right.
Yeah. like, oof, Your Honor.
And
no,
she just goes on a rant about, oh, shit. I lost it. Wait. You're going to have to cut this part out.
That's
the
fine.
ADHD.
I'll cut it. I don't mind. Oh, yeah.
Melting
no.
brain.
Thoughts just fall out of your head. I know. I was thinking about like turning the fan on because like anyone who's still listening is like our friend.
yeah.
So we
yeah.
could probably turn the fan on. Guys, would it bother you? Oh, my God. There's no fan in this room.
I yeah,
just,
I have
I'm
no
horrified.
Fan in this room.
oh, my gosh.
Fuck.
Brian has it out in the other room. Okay.
I don't remember. She went on. Oh, just basically how... we're so lucky in New York because we all show up. So they only have to do it every 8 years, where in other counties, they have to do it every 4 because their communities don't show up. And we have such a great community here in Kings County. And it's just like, shut the fuck up, bitch. Like,
no, stop it. Stop. Like,
there's 8 million people here. That's why we have to do it every year. Like, or every 8 years. Yeah. That's why. Yeah. It's because there's 4 other people living in those counties. Like, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. That, like, stop. I don't know. There's a lot I could say about, because I was like, it was like, you know, 2 full weeks of journey. Yeah. Right. So a lot.
You
right?
did a serious and, trial.
But that, like, that. So many things were like, and I actually thought our judge was like quite, I actually liked our judge just fine, but he is in no rush. I'll say that. I've never met, it seems like judges, they really don't like it if you waste their time, but they are in no rush.
No rush.
That, but also there were, I'm sorry, but there was really 2 people, but 1 person when they were like, why should you be excused from jury duty? And he's like, I don't speak English.
Yeah.
And the judge was like, sure you do. No, we didn't.
No, we didn't.
No, we didn't. No. We deliberated together for a week. No, we didn't.
Oh, my God.
Nope. And on the very first day, when you like go into the room and like the first thing we did was just like take like a straw poll, basically, like, but anonymously, like write like what you think, guilty or not guilty on like a piece of paper. The dude picked guilty for all counts, both people.
Jesus Christ.
Doesn't, but did not. That's not good.
Not good.
That's not good.
Not good.
That's not good. And that probably should have been the end of it. But like, it's really a really bad situation. I don't feel that's why everyone settled though. Cause they saw this, like these people in this room.
Exactly.
And were like,
oh, God. But, so horrible. I do have a funny fact about trial.
Oh, I want to hear it. I want to hear it.
During a 1994 murder trial, juries asked a Ouija board if the defendant was guilty. When the court found out that the guilty verdict came from a Ouija board, the jury was discharged and the trial was reset. Thank God.
Yeah. That's not good. You can't do that.
No, don't ask a Ouija board. And who the fuck brings a Ouija board into court?
Someone brought someone tucked that into their purse.
Have
or their
like metal detectors and TSA at the courts anymore.
Probably not.
Whatever the fuck.
Probably not. Someone packed that Ouija board right next to their gun and they walked in and said, I know what we're going to do.
Yeah.
We're going to ask the murder victim. Right.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. But that's why, guys. That's why. That's why.
That's like, why.
I don't know. The other thing is, like, I don't know. We'll leave it alone. We'll have a whole jury conversation. We'll do a chit-chat again.
Yeah.
Some people liked the chit-chat episodes. We'll do a jury chit-chat.
And we're getting into...
Very depressing.
Yeah.
We're getting into...
Getting into chit-chat season.
Because it's so hot.
Yeah. So we can...
And it's fall.
Stay... Yeah. Just, you know, chit-chat.
Chit-chat. Right now... And I will say this, obviously, we've been real sporadic
over
the summer because of really because
so many things
take on. Yeah, I take on too much. And because of obviously other things that were like outside of our control. But the fall, as all of you know, because we've been doing this for years, which is insane. Fall tends to not be my season.
Yeah.
And so we'll just do our best. We'll all do our best.
Yep.
Together.
Yeah.
It'll be
one
great.
Step at a time.
Yeah.
One day at
Shout
a time.
Shout out to Tim, by the way. Wait, I want to say this.
Oh,
Tim,
yeah.
Our BFF of the show.
Yeah.
FS Mania on YouTube. Just came out with a new video.
Yes.
And it's very, very good. Yes. It's great. It's like 40 minutes long.
Beautiful.
Which is just superb. Like the perfect length, actually, right?
Yes.
Because that's how long hour-long TV shows are if you're not watching them on TV and don't have commercials. Like, it's the sweet spot.
Yep.
And it's excellent. If you liked his, obviously, like, super viral video, the King Air flight, like, it's...
10 out of 10, yeah.
Of the same.
Yeah,
yes,
go
it's
watch
of
it.
The same. So, yeah, we love you, Tim, so much.
So much.
And go watch that. and probably Green Dot Aviation too, because he did a video on this story. And Aaron, just watch all the Friends. Yeah. We love them. Yeah. They're all great. Oh, I love you, Mariah.
I love you so much. Go turn on your AC.
I love you. I don't have AC. You turn on your AC.
I'm turning it on. I'll turn it on for the both
turn
of
it
us.
Turn it up. Thank you. Turn that AC on for me.
Yeah.
I'm going to go put the cats in the fridge.
Ooh, yeah, good idea. Them. They love it.
That they love it. They jump in on their own. Yep. What do you do? So
it's just a cool place to hang out.
And they've got fur.
They've got fur. Yeah, they're fine. I mean, they are animals. Yep.
They are animals. Please do not send us hate mail. The cats, they jump into the fridge. They really want to be in there.
They want to be in there. It's so hot. Just don't call PETA. It's fine.
It's fine.
Also, if you know any cat groomers, let us know.
Ooh, if you got a good cat groomer in New York City,
let me know. I got a perfect little prince for you.
I'm going to give everyone your phone number now so they can text you. Just post it. Yeah, it's too hot. Like, call now.
Yeah.
Okay.
1-800.
Great.
Okay, love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye.
So good.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of The Pod Crashed. We so hope you enjoyed it. If you want to get in touch with us for any reason, you can find us on Instagram or TikTok. And you can email us at thepodcrashed@gmail.com. We are at that funny time of year, but the intention is definitely to get these episodes out every other week. So hope to see you in a couple weeks. Unless we make a chit-chat episode. Let's see what happens. Thanks for listening.